The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
President Joe Biden has issued a warning that he will stop supplying U.S. artillery shells and other weapons if Israel goes ahead with its ground invasion of Rafah. It follows reports yesterday that some shipments of U.S. artillery had already been suspended. In an interview to CNN last night, Biden also acknowledged that U.S. weapons had been used by the Israeli Defense Forces to kill civilians in Gaza, which on the face of the evidence is not necessarily news. Well, joining me to talk about the latest developments, Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Risk Group. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, what do you make, first of all, of this suspension of the weaponry? Because when I look at the consignments, there are 1,800 2,000-pound bombs and 1,700 550-pound bombs not being delivered to Israel. I mean, even to consider how they might be used on the population of Rafah is a horrifying prospect.
It's a totally devastating prospect for a densely populated area. And of course, I think there are very few Western democracies that would countenance the use of such weaponry in and amongst a crowded civilian environment. And I think the issue here really is Biden's timing of all this. And of course, it comes at a stage where there would appear to be the closing of the gap between Hamas and Israel in terms of coming to some form of ceasefire agreement. The real problem now, of course, is that Biden has set a red line. It's a peculiar red line because clearly Israel has got a military objective, which is the destruction of Hamas, or at least it's the reduction of Hamas so it's no longer a viable fighting force. And there's a bit of a sad history, both with the Biden administration and also previously with President Obama in setting red lines. But, you know, Biden set a red line in Ukraine in 2021. And of course, in 2012, we had the famous Syrian chemical weapons red line set by Obama. Both red lines were crossed. And if you put a red line in front of somebody like Netanyahu, who is on, you know, also fighting for his political survival, what's there to be lost, actually, in crossing that red line? Mm. You know, what is Biden actually going to do? Israel doesn't need these bombs to deal with what it's got to do in Rafah. It's got enough already in reserve. And I think Biden has weakened his position. It's an exceptionally unpopular decision in the House of Representatives, both from the Republican side and large numbers of his own party. But it does, of course, play very well for people in critical Democrat constituencies where large numbers of people are sympathetic to the Palestinian cause in the upcoming election.
The images that we saw last night, I mean, the Israelis saying, you know, get out of Rafah and go to the safe zones and you'll be fine. There are tents, there's sanitation, there's food, da-da-da. And yet the images I saw on Sky last night of children being carried in the arms of a parent covered in blood and dust on foot of a missile attack. I mean, is Israel calculating that it doesn't really matter what the international community sees because they've killed Al Jazeera in their own territory, so that kind of footage may not be readily available to the Israeli population? Are they just saying, doesn't matter, we have to do what we have to do?
Let's make an assumption that the Israeli Defense Force is going through the motions and they're going through the motions as per a set of doctrines that have been given to them to reduce civilian casualties and to set up aid stations and shelter for people in Rafah to move to. Let's just assume that they're following a process and it's not cynical. But then let's also assume that in amongst all this, you have got a civilian population who may not be getting that message. You've got a civilian population that's already traumatized. Most of the people in Rafah now have come from other parts of Gaza. It's a mixed bag. You've got, in amongst all that, you've got several thousand Hamas fighters who, let's not beat around the bush, will be delighted to see more women and children killed and filmed by international news crews if they're allowed in. You know, it is the worst of all possible situations. So the Israelis, on the one hand, will You know, they've got the message after the killing of the aid workers. They know that they've got to be seen to be doing the best they can, and they're going through the motions to reduce civilian casualties. But the reality is they're lobbing high explosive devices into areas where there are civilians who cannot take shelter or who are trying to move and are probably confused and don't quite know what's going on. So I think it is inevitable that as Israel closes its grip, tightens its grip on Rafah, there will be more civilian casualties. But I cannot see a scenario at the moment where Israel holds back on an assault into Rafah. I cannot see the conditionality for why they would stop at this point.
Okay, so let us presume for a moment that they do go into Rafah and do what they claim they need to do to eliminate Hamas. I mean, quite apparently, they're not going to eliminate Hamas. I mean, people can evaporate into the general population, bide their time, and come back at it again. So, I mean, they may eliminate some key figures and they can name them, saying these are the military leaders of Hamas. Those vacuums will be filled.
They will be filled in time. And I think it is, you know, it's a cliche to say that the next generation of Hamas fighters have already been born, and some of them are probably being carried by their parents out of Rafah as we speak. But I think that's a separate issue. The reality now is what is the conditionality for this to stop? That's what everybody's now looking at. You've got, in many ways, two elections. You've got the Americans. There's a US election coming up at the end of this year. You know, Biden is standing, so he's got to look at being fairly. Yeah, he's got to manage the elements of his own party that are pro-Palestinian, which is not a small number. And on the other hand, you've got Netanyahu, who knows is up. If when it comes to an election after this campaign, Netanyahu's gone. He's toast. So what? So the ceasefire agreement, which is what everybody's now focusing on. I mean, I actually spent a bit of time going through as much as I could of it this morning. I mean, it's a massively complex ceasefire agreement, and it is in no way punishing Hamas for anything that they did on the 7th of October. I mean, it is in numerous stages. It's massively complex. It's very hard to see how this thing would actually play out in reality,
Duncan,
on the ground.
Can you lay out the bones of that? I mean, the Israelis are not going to withdraw from Gaza. I mean, that will never wash with the Israelis. Hamas, they're going to release prisoners in hostages in dribs and drabs in exchange for a multiple of their own people being released by Israel. What are the bones of this?
The bare bones are in the first 42 days, 30 odd hostages would be released by Hamas in return for an agreed number of prisoners, Palestinian prisoners, to be released by the Israelis. And then you get on to, you know, on day three, there'll be three more released. And then on day six, there'll be another five released. It's very complicated. Then you get into stage two, which is after 42 days, and the Israelis have moved back to certain areas and have actually withdrawn from Gaza. You get to stage two, and all remaining live hostages are released. And then you get to stage three, which is where the dead are exchanged. And then you've got this extraordinary reconstruction plan for Gaza, which is going to take place between 5 and 7 years, compensation for people who've lost their homes and property. And who's going to be overseeing all this? Well, it's Hamas, isn't it? So at the end of the day, they'll be taking a cut of the reconstruction effort. It's going to be overseen, apparently, by the Egyptians, by Qatar, and the United Nations. Well, the UN have already said that they're not in a position to provide a peacekeeping force of any description. They've got no resource. And I think I'm beginning to see that this so-called ceasefire agreement may never actually reach a conclusion, because it is just too complex.
Yeah. But besides
it's far
that,
too complex.
You know, in any ceasefire agreement, you've got to have something for everybody. Both sides have got to see a benefit. Looking at this, getting the hostages back is the big benefit for Israel. which is where a lot of internal political pressure is coming from. Maybe Netanyahu might see that as his salvation, I got my people back kind of thing. But other than that, there's nothing else in it for Israel, and many of those hostages returned will be in body bags anyway.
I think a large number, sadly, of the hostages will be returned in body bags. But Netanyahu, let me put things in a slightly different context. What if Netanyahu and elements of his cabinet believe that they can achieve the recovery of the hostages, or a vast majority of the ones who are still alive, through military means and not through negotiation? What if that if they see that as a viable option? And I think that actually now that they've effectively cornered the fighting element of Hamas in Rafah, as they would see it, they would their view is that they've got them into Rafah, they've got better intelligence, they know where they're not, and they now know where they are, and maybe they're operating off intelligence that we're not privy to. I'm certainly not privy to, but I think that the external language at the moment, which is the US demanding restraint, I think it's weasel words. Because I actually don't think that that is necessarily what is going on behind the scenes. I think on the ground, the Americans are saying, cool it, please don't embarrass us, but we need you to finish this. And I think that the diaspora, the Israeli diaspora and the lobby element within the United States is all about finishing the job. And I suspect that if you were to put it to the vote in Israel tomorrow, that most Israelis would rather see the job finished and the hostages returned rather than a ceasefire that rewarded, as they would see it, the aggressor. So yet again, an intractable situation, and yet again, the people who are going to suffer most in this, I'm afraid, are going to be women and children and in normal people trying to get the hell out of the way of high explosive devices and factions on the ground.
Does Netanyahu see a political future for himself then? Were he to go down that road and go into Rafah, have a military victory, liberate the hostages, probably claim even those who might be killed by that IDF force going in were already dead. That would be the kind of spin you'd imagine he'd put on it. Does he believe he could have a political future if he did that?
I don't think it's about his political future. I think it's about legacy. And if his legacy is that he is the guy that saw it through, that ignored the pressure from what they would see as a confused United States leadership, and that they stood steady and they recovered as many hostages as they could and defeated Hamas. If that's his legacy, then that's probably enough to keep him out of jail. But if this thing goes off at half cock and Rafah turns into an even worse humanitarian situation than we've seen up until now, and he loses American support publicly and materially going forward, and then he has a revolt within his own cabinet, which he's having to manage on a daily basis between his even more extreme elements like Ben Gvir, who's effectively now called Biden a friend of Hamas, it doesn't end well for him. So I think he's always been on the risk taking side of politics, and politics in Israel is a high risk business. So I can see a situation where he genuinely believes that he's got the intelligence and the capability to finish the job and get out of Gaza with the hostages, and then be seen as in some way as some sort of hero. And maybe that's his plan.
Now, we've talked about what would be in that ceasefire agreement were it ever to be reached, which you doubt that it can be. So taking the other scenario where Netanyahu continues to go into Rafah, manages to kill more of the Hamas leadership, liberate the hostages, you're still left with a Gaza Strip, which has been substantially destroyed. What happens in the case of a victorious Israel in Gaza? What happens to the population? What happens to the infrastructure? Who's going to govern the place?
Well, the worst thing that could happen under those circumstances, and my understanding is, to a degree it's already happened, is that you have a security vacuum. You end up with a lawless environment where you have gangs. Don't forget, Hamas is not the only bunch of armed thugs in Gaza. There are numerous factions. They will then try and seize control of their own territory. There will be all manner of trading over aid, which will no doubt flood into the area. But unless it is policed, and that means, curfew and control and proper policing on the ground, it will be an even more unimaginable disaster for the population of Gaza, because it will become effectively a criminal state. It will be women and children and civilian men will be defenseless against the proclivities of armed gangs. And Israel will sit back and say, it's not our problem. Now, at the moment, nobody's standing up and volunteering to put a police-type operation on the ground. Look at the efforts that it's an enormous effort to put these things on the ground. The United Nations is the traditional element that would lead on this. They've got no appetite for it. The world is overstretched in terms of its deployable resource. And the natural people to go in and do this would be the neighboring Arab states. Egypt has been mentioned. I'm not convinced. The Jordanians, the Egyptians, they're not going to get involved in this because they have their own issues with the Palestinian community. So, yeah, it remains to be seen. Maybe this is an opportunity for Turkey to step up and put some sort of force together. And that may well be, I think, be the logical conclusion here.
How depressing the whole thing is. Duncan Bullivan, CEO of the Henderson Risk Group, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.